with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Afternoon, you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines that I call Everyday USA Inc. Today is Monday. It is Monday. It is October the 24th, 2016, just about to head into a new month. Still celebrating the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party. Please check out some of the podcasts that I did earlier last week. We talked to a person who was impacted and influenced by the Panthers as a child, took advantage of the programs they had. Also, the last editor of the Black Panther National newspaper. So, we are getting on air a little bit late. We were having some issues with the phone lines, and it looks like we're trying to get our guests on the air.
This service is provided in high definition by free conference call. Access code accepted. This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
As I was just about to say, we've been having communications issues. Really don't like Skype anymore. It just really does not want to work in conjunction with our conference line. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get our guests on the line and then try to connect both of them. Okay, now it appears to work. This will be my last time using Skype, I promise.
This service is provided in high definition by freeconferencecallhd.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound. This menu will repeat.
Okay, now it does not want to pick up. Ms. Zal, do we have you on the line?
Yes.
Okay, we are having a bit of an issue with our phone systems. You can hear me, okay? Are you able to hear me? Okay, if you would, bear with me as I need to connect to our conference line because we have people who don't have any other means, so I'm going to use another system. This will be my last time using Skype, so Skype users out there, if you've been experiencing these same issues, I definitely feel you. So we will be connecting.
This service is provided in high definition by freeconferencecallhd.com.
Right.
This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
All right, Ms. Zal, were you able to hear the conference line just now?
Yes, I think they asked for an access code.
Yes, it does ask for access code, but we are in the conference line. I just wanted to make sure we have any questions from the conference line, you'll be able to hear those.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right. Without further delay, Sorry again for the technical issues. This won't happen again because we will discontinue using Skype till they straighten out their application. But this first hour, we are, as you can tell, going to speak with Ms. Karen Zhao about the Bronx 120. We've done previous interviews. Remember the last show I did Friday? I read from the first part of the press release, but we also interviewed one of the victim's mother. So this program, Black Talk Radio News, listeners, you are acquainted with the Bronx 120. Ms. Zhao is a representative with Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. And Ms. Zhao, after we speak to you about the Bronx 120, definitely will. I know that the IWOC has been involved in the national prison strikes, which there has been a media blackout, and these prisoners striking against prison slavery. We would like to get an update from you. And during the second hour, we hope to speak to a family member, another family member. This time, the family member wants to remain anonymous. I can certainly feel that, especially after the terroristic type behavior that was shown them in the courtroom as citizens, so-called citizens of the state of New York, of New York City, and paying taxes and supposed to have access to public hearings, but that is not the case. And that's what we want to talk about first and foremost with you, Ms. Zhao. But if you could, can you give our listeners, as much as you feel comfortable, a little bit about your background and in your organizing history around these sort of issues?
Around the Bronx 120? So I think we initially were there when they had a press conference immediately after the raid happened on April 27th, where we sort of started meeting family members affected by the raid. And since then, we've been building, you know, and connecting with family members affected by the raid. And the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee is committed to politically supporting all prisoners. Which is why we, you know, got behind helping family members organize around the raids. I hope that answers your question a bit. Or is there something more you want me to elaborate on, like the more recent?
Yeah, the work of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee.
Okay. So the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee is a committee of the Industrial Workers of the World. And it's a group that has been behind the national prison strike along with other groups, and we're committed to the abolition of all prisoners.
Now, you mentioned the involvement that their press conference, I guess that's what caught your organization's attention and decided to provide support and stand in solidarity. So for those who may not have heard our prior broadcast on the Bronx 120, could you just give them a brief synopsis of what the case is about? Who are the Bronx 120?
Absolutely. So on April 27th, there were seven government agencies, some state and some federal, that were involved in basically kidnapping 120 people from the Eastchester neighborhood in the Bronx, particularly in the public housing unit there called Eastchester Gardens. And so they've been claiming that these men are involved in organized gang activities, and that they have been, you know, involved in narcotics conspiracy and racketeering. And it just is very suspicious because, you know, these men have not been able to have the legal funds to, you know, hire better lawyers. And they're claiming that these men are, you know, big time gangsters. The state also claims that they've been surveying these men for a while. And if you do the math of how long they claim that they've been surveying these men, they were surveying these men when they were boys, when they were in middle school. In fact, in the initial press conference in April, a teacher of these young men spoke and was like abhorred, like was just so like, you know, upset by the fact that you claim that you're surveying underage black men, you know, and claiming that they're a gang when they're in middle school. And you're claiming that they're a gang based on the fact that they socialize with people in their neighborhood, just like kids in any other neighborhood would. there's no other way to describe it besides state terror, no? For the fact that, like, seven agencies would be involved in claiming that these men are involved in a very organized, you know, gang conspiracy.
Right, trying to paint them as if... Well, we're used to the mainstream media playing along with the police state and this demonization of whatever victim they choose to demonize. I think there's a concerted effort to misinform the public or prejudice the public against people before they've ever had a day in court. And I certainly see that going on. Like here, I mean, you would think this is Al Capone, yeah. Bugsy Siegel, or, you know, pick one of the old time gangsters that used to rule New York and Chicago. And most of these are very young men. And you raised the point I want to take you back to. You raised constitutional issues. That's very troubling, but I don't think it should be surprising to those who have been paying attention to surveillance issues and these quote-unquote gang databases that law enforcement have been compiling for a very long time. I know that the city of Chicago or the Chicago Police Department spent over $1 million, I'm not sure the exact total, to create this computer database that's supposed to be able to predict crime based on the people they're stopping on the street and putting them in there into the database in their quote-unquote alleged gang affiliations. And it's supposed to be able to predict crime based off of where these individuals are. Now, they were also too putting minors into these databases, so this does raise constitutional issues. Has the state, I don't know how much you know about the Bronx 120 case, I don't know, but did they seek warrants to surveil each and every one of these individuals? Did they go to a judge and spell out? So those are some of the questions I have, but there's got to be some constitutional issues of surveilling minors.
To the best of my knowledge, no. I think those would be a matter of the public record, and, you know, the reporters who have been on top of examining this case, I don't remember them reporting something like that. I do want to give a couple updates about what's going on with folks since probably the last time y'all spoke to a parent or someone involved in IWOC. From what we gathered, you know, I think at the court date on the 19th and the 20th this past week, it was, you know, like there were a lot of issues going on where they were just clearly denying family members access to the courtroom, or even the overflow room didn't have adequate hearing and audio equipment for folks to listen in on what's going on. And so, but from what we gathered in the, you know, in the hallways of, like, overhearing what lawyers were saying to family members, they've been pressuring a lot of folks to take pleas. And four people faced capital charges so far from...
What are capital charges?
These indictments. Like capital punishment, because it's a federal case, even though capital punishment is, you know, does not happen in New York State because it's a federal case. People are getting
so we're talking about death row.
Yes.
Now, I do know a little bit about the case, and unfortunately, there was a victim of one of the young men indicted along with the others with the Bronx 120, but that person had already served prison time, if I'm not mistaken, for the killing of that elderly woman in the community who was a bystander, was not the target, but this person did serve their crime. But now I'm hearing from some of the press reports that they're even trying to bring that into it and say that there was a conspiracy among people who had nothing to do with it.
I think they're charging 120 people for four murders that happened. So obviously, you know, it's not, yeah. It just seems like a mass net, you know, a new technique of the street sweep, or to sort of indict as many people as possible. and to incarcerate them. You know, the judge is pressuring folks to take pleas.
People
have to make decisions. Yes, from what I gathered with conversations with family members, they have to accept pleas by the end of December. We've been corresponding with some folks incarcerated on this case, and they've expressed just the amount of pressure they feel. While they're in prison, they're saying, like, I can't think straight. How am I supposed to make these decisions, these very serious consequential decisions about, you know, how my life is going to play out while I'm incarcerated and, like, not, you know, in a good mental state to even want to fight back?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Now, getting back to what happened last week, which was the subject of a press release from IWOC, and you spoke on it a little bit, but and certainly that is an important element about plea deals. I think on one of our programs, New Abolitionist Radio, the figure has been cited that I know over 90%, might be over 95% of criminal court cases end in plea deals. And there has been talk about people not allowing themselves to be pressured, that you can clog up the system. It would grind to a halt if nobody took plea deals. It would just grind it to a halt. But if you're not the individual that's in that position where you look, where they're threatening you with capital punishment and 20, 30 years. So I certainly don't want to put any undue pressure on those individuals to make those decisions for themselves. I'm just citing a statistical fact that most of these cases, and the system works for plea deals, and very rarely do we have an opportunity, those who register to vote or have a driver's license and included in a jury pool, we don't get to practice what they call jury nullification, where we seen that happen in struggles in the past where people refuse to convict in such cases, mm-hmm. where it's blatantly racism and state repression and terrorism towards a community, and specifically it's young men. But you, in the press release, it was mentioned that there was some games being played at the courtroom, like some of the family members were directed to an overflow room where the TV monitor didn't really work, and there were still seating available in the courtroom, and these court officers were getting kind of belligerent and antagonistic towards family members who wanted to go and persist in exercising their rights to be in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. So could you talk more about that? What are some of the stories you heard?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was just blatant racism. I was with a family member who was really flustered by the fact that she was in the overflow room, and she was just getting really angry because she couldn't, like, you couldn't see any of the defendants or any of the men in the video that they had up. And mind you, there were people that came from out of town that flew in to be able to, you know, witness what was going on in court and to, you know, be there for their loved ones. And the audio equipment wasn't working, so you couldn't barely hear, like, you couldn't hear what the judge was saying. And this is, mind you, this is their first court date for a lot of these men since their arraignment April 27th. So people have been waiting for months for an update on what's going on, right? And so, and obviously this was, like, brought up to the court officers, and they're like, oh, we're working on it, and, you know, but there was no AV technician that came. And so I was with her when some folks tried to go to the courtroom, and there were clearly folks that were leaving, and the court officers were very belligerent to her. It was beyond words. Like, I just could not believe that a human being would treat another human being like that. They were literally like, get out, get out. And she was incredible. She, like, stood up for herself and was like, don't talk to me like a dog. Like, I'm a person. Like, you don't have the right to be that belligerent to me when all I want is to be able to see my son in the courtroom. That's my right.
I would add, I mean, I don't know her personally, but I would add that I'm sure that I'm under the impression that everybody pays taxes, whether you pay income tax, payroll tax, whatever. You buy something, you're paying a sales tax. So you're talking to people who pay your salary. I mean, just the whole arrogance that I find with so-called public servants. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't call them public servants. They are not mm-hmm. there to serve us. They are there to enforce the system.
Yeah. And one thing I want to add was, after there was a recess during the trial, or during the hearing, and so family members saw on the video that there were people in the courtroom that were leaving. So they were hoping that, you know, they could get some seats in the courtroom. And so, you know, almost like everyone in the overflow room went downstairs to try to find seating. And the court officers threatened arrest. They basically made everyone leave the building. Now, that's like unconstitutional, no?
Well, I had my mic muted, but when you said that, I called it terrorism.
Yeah.
This is state terrorism. The people felt terrified, and it was done for the threat. It sounds to me like violence was threatened of mm-hmm. arrest, incarceration, enslavement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this case is political. Whether one wants to just try to say, oh, this is criminal. No, this is political, and this is political repression, because it's extending to now the family members. So, yeah, please continue.
Yeah, and absolutely. And, you know, one of the family members had this really poignant analysis of, like, you see how they're treating us, and we're family members. Like, imagine how they're treating our loved ones in MDC and MCC. And she was just spot on, because the day after, we found out from, you know, people we've been in contact in, that many of the defendants were placed in the box. In fact, they took people out of the box that were supposed to be there until the end of November and put in new folks there. And it seems like there's no other explanation for it, but just that, you know, this is, like you said, this is clearly like a very political case, and that they're trying to, you know, punish people and repress people as much as they can. And this is all pretrial. In fact, one person is going to be in solitary for a year pretrial, and has been denied visits from his mother from now to October 2017.
Wow. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that was the case with Khalif Browder as well, who committed suicide. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't his mother recently commit suicide as well?
Yes, I believe so.
And again, like the key thing that you mentioned was, this is pre-trial. So this is before mm-hmm. anybody has been convicted. I guess mm-hmm. the bail is so high that's why they're still in there. The families can't afford it, or what's going
on
there? Or were they denied bail?
Most of the men were not offered bail.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, I think with a couple of folks, there's been really, like, they've had bail hearings, and the prosecutors have been very intent on them not getting bail.
Okay.
And the documents that have come out that, because those documents, I think, have been made public of the evidence that they have against these folks. And it's just utter bullshit, you know? It's just conversations people had with each other over text messages. It does not amount to anything besides people socializing.
So I want to ask this question. We have about 5 minutes left with you, and I want to ask this question before I give you opportunity to give us an update on the prison strikes has. Mm-hmm. And I know that on the website that people should visit is Bronx 120, that is mm-hmm. 120 in the numbers, but Bronx spelled out, www.bronx120.org. I believe you may be able to contribute funds for legal defense, but my question is, has any of the civil rights organizations that have attorneys. Oh, I'll just throw some names out there. Benjamin Crump usually pops up when there's a black victim. Let me see who else. Al Sharpton's National Action Network is headquartered in New York, if I'm not mistaken. There is the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And I would also throw out there the ACLU, because I do see constitutional issues. Are any of these organizations getting involved?
I believe we, from the beginning, we tried to reach out to many of these groups, or some of these groups, I should say, and either people were unwilling to take it because it's a federal case, which was the case with, you know, the NLG. And what is really telling is that one of the mothers had luck reaching out to the law firm behind the, I think, the civil action suit against Stop and Frisk. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it seemed like the law firm was seriously considering it for a while, but they got back to her, and if I'm quoting it correctly, they said, like, the scope of this case is just too much for us to even, like, you know, handle, something along those lines, I should say, which is quite telling.
Yeah, that means that some of these organizations need to collaborate then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
certainly that's
go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we need folks with the legal knowledge to support in whatever way possible. And just on the legal issue, I just want to bring up that, you know, permanent exclusion is also part of what's been going on. You know, even before these men have been convicted of a crime, their family members are getting kicked out of public housing, or, you know, like, simultaneously while, you know, you're dealing with
right another yes those families. I hope they are keeping documentation. That sound like a violation of their rights again. So I mean, these are old tactics. There's nothing new. But before we run out of time, I appreciate you giving us time to talk about this issue again. People can go to bronx120.org for more information and find out how they can contribute.
I just want to also plug, there's a Facebook group too, Free the Bronx 120, for updates on actions too, if that's easier for people to access.
Okay, and please give us an update in about 3 minutes, if you can, on the national prison strike against prison slavery.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to the best of my ability. It seems like there have been some successes in various places, especially in Michigan and in Alabama, in which not only have folks been showing how coordinated their efforts are, but also that, you know, their working class brothers and sisters that are, you know, COs there have gotten behind the strike in various ways by not showing up for work, basically. I'm very hopeful because, you know, the state is still using the strategy of when they believe that folks have been the agitators behind these strikes, they transfer them to another facility. In the past, what that has led to is strikes in prisons that haven't striked before. So I think that the strike is just the beginning of a lot of good actions to end the carceral state. I just want to mention that, you know, in New York, our local is very small. It consists of just a handful of folks, and we're starting to do work where we're building relations with folks on the inside in women's facilities, as well as, you know, in other facilities where people are doing slave labor for Core Craft, which is a $48 million industry.
Ms. Zhao, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're having issues with our system. I do, if you could just hold 1 second, let me see if this is the anonymous person. Hold, please. Again, Skype is giving us all kind of issues today. Is this the anonymous guest who was scheduled for Black Talk Radio today? 321.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. 3-2.
Yes,
okay. If you could hold for me, I can't add you to the conference, so we're having issues with our communication system. So I'm going to wrap it up with Ms. Zhao. But you just stay on hold. Don't hang up, and then we're going to bring you in, okay?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Let me resume this call. Let's see. Okay, Ms. Zhao, do we have you back?
Yes. Sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes, that was our... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. That was our anonymous caller. So if you could tell people how they can visit your organization online, how they can keep up with the National Prison Strikes.
Absolutely. They can get in touch with us through our email. It's IWOC, IWOC, period, NYC, at riseup.net. And they can keep track of the National Prison Strike. I think, you know, it's going down, and BuzzFeed have been great, on staying on top of what's been going on. And I just want to plug this Saturday at 3 p.m., the NYC Anarchist Action called for a solidarity demo outside of the Barclays Center. Barclays has been involved, has benefited from slavery, and obviously the center has kicked out working class black and brown folks in Brooklyn. So 3 p.m. this Saturday.
All right. And I will also say, if you're on social media, just do a search on two hashtags. That's Prison Strike, hashtag Prison Strike, or hashtag Prison Strikes. If you're on Twitter, Facebook, you can find information being posted. Ms. Zhao, thank you again, and we hope to have you back.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having IWOC. Appreciate you.
You have a great day, ma'am.
You too now.
Okay, caller 321.
Yeah.
Thank you for hanging on with us. We do need to take a station identification break. It's just going to take about a minute, and then I'm so glad that you called us, because we definitely want to give you the floor to tell us about the tragic experiences that many of the family members had as they tried to go to the courthouse to show support for their family members. So thank you, and continue to hold.
Thank you.
You're listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. I broadcast this program live every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News again. We have another guest for you. This is a family member of one of the victims that are being referred to as the Bronx 120. We've done a number of programs and talked to other family members. We just got off the phone with Ms. Zhao of the Incarcerated Workers of the World. I think that's the name of it. I'm sorry if that's not it. But our guest today wants to remain anonymous, and this is a real person because the people who referred her to this program, I trust. And so I can certainly understand why a person would not want to reveal their identity over the public radio airways, given the terroristic behavior of the NYPD slave catchers. So Anonymous, I'll just call you Miss Anonymous. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Miss Anonymous, thank you for joining us and for coming on to give a firsthand account of what occurred in the courtroom last week as family members turned out to support their family members. And we've gotten media reports, but we would like to hear it. It's always great to get it firsthand from a person who was there. So the floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you for hearing it. Hearing us, you know, we are concerned for our loved ones that are incarcerated and what may happen to them while they're in there. But we weren't allowed to go into the courtroom to see our loved ones, and I don't understand why. And then to top it off, the treatment that we received as if we were criminals ourselves. Even though the ones that are in there probably not. You know, they're in there for one reason, only the color of their skin. But I just don't understand. We're taxpayers. We want to see our loved ones. Why were we prevented from seeing them?
And I apologize, it's very emotional for me.
Had you ever experienced anything like this before at a public building providing so-called public services? I mean, this is a taxpayer-funded building, right? The courthouse is. I assume the courts are funded by taxpayers. Had you ever been treated like that by public employees?
No.
And I still don't understand why
there's no accountability for what happened. You knew about this date for months. You knew that people would come to see their loved ones. Why would you try to prevent us? And then you have them go to a room where you know the camera doesn't work and the audio is terrible.
We also got reports that there was open seating in the courtroom. And I get your point that they knew this was going to happen and they had larger courtrooms that they could have scheduled these public hearings. These are public hearings. Must stress that.
Thank you.
And that even though they did not put it in a larger courtroom, there were still seating available. And did you witness people being kept from it? Were you kept out the courtroom?
Well, our family members were not able to go in. If they had that, nobody that I knew about it. I don't know who. If this is what they're saying after. Nobody that I knew, no one, none of us were allowed in. So I don't know where that came from, and I don't know if they're trying to spin it. The after the fact, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, yes.
Hear that at all.
Yes, ma'am. We had gotten press reports that family members saw people coming out and knew that there and other people came out and told them there was seating available, and that the family members, like yourself, part of the Bronx 120 case, were not permitted to go in. And one person in a press release said that they were persistent, and on the third try they finally let them in, but not before they had threatened them. Yeah. But this person did get in there, and this person through the press said that there was seating available.
Wow. Well, I didn't know. I guess, you know, we didn't know. But I guess if you pursued or, you know, but you have to go the stress of the whole matter. It's already a stressful situation, and it's just added stress that you have to go in there. I mean, it's crazy. You knew that this is not one or two defendants. You knew you were going to have a large amount of defendants in there. You've known that. It should have been larger, a courtroom, which would have had seats to accommodate people, especially those who were traveling from out of state, to see their loved ones. This is not right. I mean, this is not. What are you hiding? What is it that you had no problem when they were arrested? Big press conference, the names out there, all of that stuff. You had no problem doing that. So what is it now that you're trying to prevent loved ones from going into a courtroom to see their loved one?
the case progress or whatever that they're trying to do, or to see what they're trying to do to our loved ones.
It sounds like not only are there some due process and constitutional issues surrounding the Bronx 120 victims themselves, but it seems like there are some very serious civil infractions, if not criminal infractions, against family members, because I believe that your rights were violated as well.
I believe that wholeheartedly. I mean, how this happened was unfair. How they're treated unfair. The family members are being treated. That, you know, it's like we don't say anything, keep quiet, or this is gonna, you know, really? I thought we lived in the United States of America.
Keep quiet or else? Did I hear that correctly?
No, like it's the way that you feel that you're being treated.
Okay.
It's like, you know, it's like, you know, don't say anything, or you don't want to put your loved one in harm's way while they have them there. You know, you want to them to be okay. But in the same aspect, I mean, I don't believe that the government is being fair, in which a perfect example is not being allowed to see your loved one when there's a court hearing. Why wasn't that allowed? And like, what can we do?
I mean, I don't know how things work in New York City in terms of the court, but I assume that, and I've been in I've been in one a courtroom in Arizona, a courtroom in Hawaii, and a courtroom here in North Carolina. And the way that the courts that I have been to work is the court has a docket. Judges are assigned cases. The cases are assigned courtrooms, and the courtrooms are open to the public. Anybody.
Exactly.
I don't even have to be related to anyone.
Exactly. Exactly. But does it operate differently than on the state federal level than it does on the state level? Is that the difference, that the federal level can pretty much do what they want to do? I don't know.
No, I mean, while the charges may be federal, it's still happening inside the local courtroom in that jurisdiction. I don't know if this is a federal court, but I do remember recalling one of my cousins had been overcharged with attempted murder. He took his to trial. He had been attacked, him and some other people were attacked on the North Carolina highway, where you had a racist white male get out his car doing a traffic jam and brandish a small knife and stabbed, you know, it into the top of the car. And my cousin got out and they ended up fighting. My cousin seriously injured this man. So they tried to charge him with attempted murder. And that was a federal case in the courtroom in Charlotte, North Carolina. And now I'm remembering that was open to the public too.
Okay, so where's the national news in this? Where is it that, you know, the outrage to say, why were people, you know, being not able to be let into the courtroom? And then conveniently, unless somebody goes fight three times, then they allow you to go in? You have to go through that stress?
Have you tried to contact anyone else outside of our network
to tell
your story?
No, but I may be doing that after today, just to find out why was it that they decided not to let, or, you know, the person that you said that went in was able to, but obviously was after a fight. Why should that person have to go on three tries to get in?
Yes, ma'am.
It should have been automatic. And was there a reason for that? Is this how it's going to be going forward? Is that how? So what happens when trial comes around? What, they're going to stop people from going in there too?
Well, our previous guest, Ms. Zhao, with the Incarcerated Workers of the World, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, I'm sorry, the IWOC said that from information that she has, that the courts are trying to, the prosecutors, the judges are trying to prosecute, pressure these young men into taking plea deals, because 95% of cases, criminal court cases in the United States, end in plea deals, and a lot of pressure is always applied to get people, you know, to go ahead and just plead and not take it to court, where there's always that chance you might get a sympathetic jury or just one juror. That's all it takes, is just one juror.
One juror, that's right. And if it's 95%, that plea, the federal is even higher. So on federal cases, if it's 95%, then it's probably 99% of federal that will take a plea deal, because the threshold is so much higher, because they overcharge and they have all these, you know, years that they're trying to tack on to people. Not only that, there are people that are charged for the same crime who've already served their time in a state. There are men that they have arrested that have already served the crime under the state level, and they're charging them for the same charge federally because they can, and it's not double jeopardy.
Yes, because they're making it part of RICO. See, RICO.
Yes.
Has been used to take down organized crime. When they want to get creative, that is, the system wants to get creative, they come up with things like this. But, you know, the programs on our network, we do a lot of analysis. And like when the Ferguson report came out, we took a look at that, where it was talking about laws were violated, federal laws were violated. I didn't see them make any arrest or anything like that. But we were saying, this meets the RICO statutes. This is organized crime. You had a city manager, the city council, working with the police chief and the police department to raise revenue off of poor black and middle class African Americans, black people in this country, and you were getting about $2 million a year annually just of harassing and ticketing and then all the bail. That was RICO charges. But again, the United States government, the federal government, when it comes to these sort of crimes, they just come out with a report, document the crimes, but where are the prosecutions? But then when it comes to young men, women, usually of the black and brown variety, we want to throw the book at you and want to put you on death row and give you 100 years.
Exactly. Unbelievable. A lot of these kids are never been arrested before. My family never been arrested before. Never had nothing. Been away from New York for years in college, and look what happened.
Simply because he had an affiliation with some other people or knew some other people, right?
Apparently, yes, because of where he grew up, I mean, in the Bronx. Yes. Mm-mm-mm. Yes. But, you know, it says, golly, if you think that if every person had affiliation with somebody, you know, the jail will be, we wouldn't have enough place to hold hold people enough space. But based on the guilt by association, and that's it. You could come in, you're the federal government, throw all these charges, these overcharges. A lot of these kids don't have any money, don't have no outlet, don't have, you know, to fight the federal government.
The way that media, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, based off the mainstream media reports that I've been seeing, you would think like these young men were part of this organized criminal syndicate that was pulling in hundreds of thousands, if not millions a week, you know, involved in all these, you know, murders, committed hundreds of murders.
Not true at all. Some of these kids, they pulled out of different states, went to their colleges, hadn't been left the state years ago. You know, the way they make it seem, if you didn't know, if I didn't know my loved one, you would think they were saying that these kids were on the corners of the street in the Bronx every night, robbing somebody, breaking up somebody's house, killing somebody. How is it that 120
people get charged with the same crime. How is that possible? How could 120 people get charged with the same crime? Same four crime. How is that possible? You got to think of people have to think of it. How, you know, even if hypothetically we were to believe what you were saying, there's got to be one that's the bigger and doing more, you know, flunkies. You know what I'm saying? For everybody charged with the same crime? Isn't that a red flag? Something's not right here?
Certainly a red flag for me.
Yes.
And this, I just want to stress, people, this is a federal government. So we're talking the Obama administration. We're talking about the Loretta Lynch Department of Justice. We're talking about what's the guy name at the FBI that just gave the press conference not that long ago to tell us all the crimes that Hillary Clinton and her staff committed. But, hey, I'm going to recommend no charges.
Yeah. Yes, it is a federal and that's so it is.
Okay.
It's so sad. It's so sad. Trust me. It is a sad situation and I don't understand. I'm waiting. I'm saying where is the outcry of what they're doing to these kids? Where is that? Because are you saying to me that, and all of a sudden recently, because the year before they got arrested, they arrested 100 people in Harlem. So all of a sudden, since the stop and frisk ended in 2013, now we have these gang crimes. So there's no other gang in New York City, no mafia, no Asian, no whites, no other gangs but
right.
Black.
Harlem. Very good point. Very good observation, ma'am. Very good observation. We have about 7 minutes left in the broadcast. Let me ask you this. How is your family member holding up? Have you had any communications whatsoever, whether by snail mail?
Yes.
How are they holding up?
Yes. Tough. Because never been very active in his community, you know, and his community, doing well in school. Just very, can't believe. Just to this day, do you realize it's going to, in 3 days, it's going to be 6 months since these kids were arrested? 6 months. And to this day, he can't believe this is happening to him.
You know, there are just too far many people in this country that happens to. I think some of the figures some of my comrades in the abolitionist movement have cited is that millions of people, we talk about the 2.5 million in modern slavery or in jails, but many more million just go through the system, and even just going through the system, the bail, the attorney fees, that can, the time spent in these jails, in prisons, and lockup is stressful enough. And so, I mean, it could destroy you just going, if you get declared innocent at the end of it, it still could really destroy you, and who's going to compensate you for that?
Exactly. Just to show that is, even if you, it changes your life forever. It changes your life for forever. When you think about it, I don't know the name. There's a story of a young man that was arrested as a 17-year-old for stealing a backpack in New York and spent 3 years in Rikers. It's going because he wouldn't take a plea deal because he didn't do it.
Khalif
and
Browder.
They kept him in Rikers, and he got 3 years until they dropped the charges and let him out. And then he committed suicide.
Yeah, Khalif Browder is his name.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that destroyed his mother, who recently committed suicide or reportedly.
Suicide as well. Yeah. Yes.
So it's no joke. I understand my family has been through it, although I was overseas fighting for Mr. Charlie during the Gulf War while they were making my little brother here 10 years a slave. So You know, when I could take leave, I came here. So I can identify with people who has gone through that or has a family member who's gone through that, because our family has gone through it. Well, if I include all my cousins and my uncles and aunts' kids on both sides of the family, I could be talking about a bunch of people, you know. So, wow. Well, I do want to thank you for coming on. Did you have any closing remarks that you would like to leave with the listeners, and any websites that you could recommend for people to get more information and how to get involved?
I believe the website is Bronx120.org. Is the Bronx120.org to get information about the kids that are arrested, and just asking people to please get involved, whether it be this or your community, when you see injustice anywhere, especially for minorities. We have to stick out for one another, and ask to pray for those, the Bronx 120, and all those who are wrongly incarcerated or charged for a crime that they didn't commit. We just have to, you know, just keep our faith this strong and encourage our loved ones if any one of you is going through this.
Well, right. Yes, ma'am, and I'm glad that your loved one that is going through this, I'm glad that they have a strong person like yourself. You seem to be a strong person who knows what's going on and is not confused about the situation, and they have someone like you to help them get through this. And we hope that they, along with all of the Bronx 120, get through this. And we hope that these legal organizations out there, there are a number of issues here. ACLU, there's a number of, it seemed like some of these young men in the Bronx 120 have been under police surveillance since middle school. So what's that about? All right. So
thank you very much.
Thank you, Miss Anonymous. And anytime that you want to get information out through our platform, through our network, don't hesitate to get back in touch with us through the channels that you know how to get in touch with us.
All right. I will. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a blessed day.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes our interview with Miss Anonymous, who has a loved one who is counted among the Bronx 120. Again, check out the Bronx120.org website. I do want to take a station identification break, kick some message music so I can clear my throat. And when we come back, we will go over some of the news of the day. Just a couple of items I like to point your way. So much out there that's going on. Try to make people aware as much as possible. But we will be back. If you have any commentary, any observations, anything you would like to share in regards to our two guests we had, both talking about the Bronx 120, in regards to the national prison strikes against slavery, or anything that you think is newsworthy that is not making it out through the corporate media, which we know it's not, so no surprise there, but that you want to make people aware of, just be brief, and we'll certainly try to get you on. So those telephone numbers are up on the promos. If you are listening through other platforms that where you don't see a number, that telephone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Anytime you would like to speak, hit *6 and 1. That's *6 and 1. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, which is providing you with new black media for the new millennium.
I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Give up on my way. Oh, yeah.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Couldn't it be crazy? Don't you step for crazy? Couldn't it be crazy?
Jails in America are being privatized. They are on the stock exchange, and you don't build a hotel unless you expect when they're building prisons, they want to build them, but they're building them for you.
I look around this room and I see nothing but untapped potential. You have potential. You have... Oh boy.
But now they've got to create a culture in the community that lends to violence, crime, drugs, guns, prostitution, and it's a steady pipeline to prison. Come back in the hood riding expensive cars. But your brothers and sisters are dying on your words. And you are aiding in the conspiracy to exterminate the black male. You got to know
And at the highest levels of government, they've plotted our demise.
Oh, boy.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. from BlackTalkRadio.com. I'm sorry. BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, providing you with new black media for this new millennium. Join us there. Become a subscriber. It's free to subscribe to all the podcasts that are distributed through that platform. Also want to remind you that Black Talk Radio Network is supported in part by donations to the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. Visit us online at blacktalkmediaproject.org. And last but not least, check out the new black online social media platform, BTR Community, for a new online black social experience. So, I just have some afterthoughts on what we just heard from the anonymous family member, Miss Anonymous, about what was they were going through. And also what Miss Zhao said about them being targeted since middle school. Think about that, really. So you identified these young men in middle school as, for lack of a better term, let's say problem children, that they were on a path that was going to lead them to one of the prison plantations where they will be made into modern day slaves. But you didn't try no kind of intervention. I'm talking about the state now. I'm talking about these slave catchers, see, because they like to use propaganda like they out here helping the children. I follow CMPD, which is the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department social media account on Facebook. Oh, that's called, y'all know it as Facebook. And they are, I have to give whoever their media operations officer is, I have to get them an A1 job on their propaganda that they put out. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that you don't have officers like that, but I'm talking about in this particular case, I'm talking about in the Bronx 120 case, it appears that some of these young men were identified in middle school and I don't know what the PAL league, what police athletic league. No, there was no intervention whatsoever. You just surveilled these young men, put them under surveillance. See, that's how you know what kind of system you live in. And you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where slavery is legal. I am so tired of quote unquote educated black people showing up in mainstream media talking about, oh, when African Americans were slaves, or when Lincoln freed the slaves. And I'm like, in all of your college studies, did they not ever crack open the Constitution, lay it out, however, had you pull it up online, and did you at no time look at the 13th Amendment? Now, I hear a lot of black people cite the 14th Amendment because that's what allegedly gave former slaves citizenship. But what about the 13th Amendment, which was put in place first to target those former slaves for slavery, along with the free black population, which was pretty sizable during the time? In 1850, there were 500,000 free black people listed in the census. So 13th Amendment not only sought to put these former victims of slavery right back into a new form of slavery, it sought to criminalize all black people, period. And that is exactly what it has done all the way up to this period. So I'm tired of these. You can't call yourself a scholar if you say that Lincoln freed some slaves or slavery was abolished in this country. You are not a scholar. Stop calling yourself a scholar. Or else that means that being a scholar is just a watered down term that a bunch of people are using. These people actually are not scholarly. And they don't know what they're talking about. So those are some thoughts that I had. where was the intervention on these young men's behalf when they was in middle school? And let's not believe the lies, like the anonymous caller said. This person that's involved, that they know, their loved one, never been arrested and was in college. Never been arrested. And they've gone after some of these kids to other states while they're getting a higher education. Come on, y'all. Come on. This is absurd. And while it is racist, pattern practices of racism here, let us not ignore the role of the proxy races. That's the non-white person, the black person that participates and enforces the system or rubber stamps what the system does. We have a black president. Well, I should say y'all have a black president. You have a black attorney general. And all of them are in very powerful positions in this system. We're talking about the federal system. So it seems that they are unwilling to use those positions to practice justice. So what good are they then? Why should we cheer black success if, when, you know, the whole point is we need to get these people elected, we need to get them in these different positions, we must celebrate them when they get appointed to these positions in the system, and then we proceed to ignore their role in making sure that the system continues on its path of slavery and racism. It's absurd. So, again, the telephone number to call if you have any thoughts, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound and *6 and 1 to comment on air. Speaking of the prison strikes, the national prison strikes against prison slavery, and I was running out of time, so I didn't have the opportunity to ask Ms. Zhao about if the Noose, I think that's how you pronounce it, Noose Correctional Institution, which is here in North Carolina, is part of the prison strikes, because a North Carolina publication, WRAL.com, published this article that says 500 inmates evacuated from Noose Correctional Institution after 2 injured. This is coming to you, apparently this is in Goldsboro, North Carolina. It says that 2 people were injured during a Sunday night incident at the Noose Correctional Institution. I hope that's not how you pronounce that, but it's spelled N-E-U-S-E, Noose. Wow. So, officials evacuated a portion of the facility this morning. They say due to damage inside some sections of the facility, approximately 500 inmates were transferred to other prisons across the state. 288 inmates remain at the facility. So this is not unlike some of the reports that I've been getting under the hashtag prison strikes or prison strike. Is going down.com or .org, I believe Ms. Zhao mentioned. I was getting information from them as well, good source information on the national prison strikes, but I have been getting those reports. I think last week we even reported on, I think it was New Abolitionist Radio, could have been BTR News, where hundreds of prisoners were being transferred to other prisons to break up this national movement against modern day slavery and human trafficking. The authorities in Goldsboro, North Carolina, are saying that 1 staff member was taken to a local hospital with 9 life-threatening injuries, while an inmate who also received 9 life-threatening injuries was treated and released. I think they meant treated and sent back to whatever slave plantation they're going to hold them on. The North Carolina Department of Public Safety said a disturbance was started by a small group of inmates at about 4:30 p.m. An inmate set two separate fires that has since been extinguished. The fires damaged parts of the prison's diagnostic building and a storage shed that held supplies. The inmates also broke windows and damaged four dorms. You can read the rest of this article. It is published. You can find the link at btrcommunity.com on Scotty T's profile. That's the profile I use for this program and my program notes. Although I didn't make a post and call it program notes, I'm just sharing from all over the community. But that is one of the articles I shared this morning. I thought it was interesting. Again, we are not getting national news reports, although this is at least the second, could be more, but second story I've heard about the mass transfer, and we're talking about 500 inmates here, 500 victims of modern day slavery have been transferred to other prisons. You would think this would be on MSNBC, CNN, ABC, World News Tonight with David Muir. You're not seeing it. You're not seeing it. And then last week I said to somebody off air, but I'll say it on air. Now, if let's say, for example, this staff member, this prison plantation overseer who was taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, let's say he had gotten his head cut off or her head cut off by one of the victims of slavery, I bet you then it would be on every national, international news outlet. That's what I said offline. But I think I said on air that if there was a lot of violence going on, that might get national attention. But thus far, again, we have to always question everything. I don't know if any of this report is true, but about what caused the disturbance could have been, we're not going to work. We're not going to work this day. We're not going to run our plantation for you. And especially under the laws of the North Carolina State Constitution, slavery is illegal. A lot of people don't know that about North Carolina. It's one of the few states that mentions slavery in its constitution, in its state constitution, that actually abolishes slavery, unlike the federal constitution people like to brag about and call a freedom document, and it's nonsense. I guess it's all about your perspective and your role in the system. But the North Carolina Constitution says slavery is forever abolished. Now, they can make you work, but if they make you work for it not to be slavery, they will have to be paying you the state minimum wage or the federal minimum wage if it's a federal facility in the state of North Carolina. Again, where is the ACLU? Where are any of these legal organizations that take in millions of dollars annually for these type of cases? Slavery is illegal in the state of North Carolina. But yet, many of the victims of slavery in North Carolina, nobody is standing up to enforce the Constitution, the North Carolina Constitution. Apparently, people in North Carolina, after the Civil War, thought it was important to add that to the Constitution and say slavery will forever be abolished. We're not going behind Lincoln with that loophole in the 13th Amendment. No, we're going to spell it out in one simple sentence. Slavery is forever abolished. So anyway, that is what is happening here in North Carolina. I cannot say for certain if this is part of the national prison strikes or not, but I would lean towards it being part of it, considering that we are going into the fifth week of these prison strikes that have been going on nationally. that millions of people are not aware of because they are getting their information from the agents of the state, and that is the corporate media. Speaking of the corporate media, if you're not willing to tell lies for your butter biscuits, if you're not willing to read from teleprompters, and no matter what those teleprompters say, then they have no use for you. And the former governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, also a former wrestler, let me see if I can locate that story where he said that his Iraq war opposition cost him his job or his deal with MSNBC. So he is talking to independent media outlet, the Young Turks web-based outlet, and he is, again, the former governor of Minnesota, and he is discussing his deal with MSNBC. Let's go ahead and cue that up.
On your show, we talked about my MSNBC experience, but and I know once before when you were on, we talked a little bit about it, but I think in this context, it's important for people to understand that. You had a deal with MSNBC at
right
one point.
Right, I came out of office in 2003. I was the hottest commodity out there. Fox, MSNBC, and CNN got in a bidding war for me. MSNBC won. I signed a three-year contract with them. I was supposed to be on five nights a week, but there was a problem. After I signed the contract, we were putting the whole show together. It came out that I opposed the Iraq war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the same time, they had just hired Phil Donahue. Phil was their highest-rated show. He also opposed the Iraq war. Phil got pulled from the air, and I was never allowed on, basically.
So I want people
And they paid me for the whole 3 years, so I was handcuffed by their contract. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do any news shows, couldn't do any other network, and they paid the entire 3 years. It's the easiest money I've ever made, but they, in essence, censored me because I honor contracts, and, you know, as long as they paid me, they owned me.
Yeah. So they did the same thing to Ashley Banfield. She spoke out
against
the war.
Oh, yeah. Ashley got pulled.
Yeah. And not only did they pull her from the air, when she was a huge star at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Giant rising star. They wouldn't let her out of her contract, and then they moved her office inside a closet. You know why? It's not about Ashley Banfield. That was sending a message to everyone else in the building.
Yeah.
Okay. We have... So we worried about the Russians. We're worried about Al Jazeera. And I understand. I understand those concerns, right? I'm not minimizing those concerns.
We should be worried about ourselves.
We should be worried about us, too. Because when MSNBC does that, well, that's also limiting free speech.
Think back, people. There was nobody speaking out against the Iraq war before we invaded.
Mm-hmm.
On the media. There was nobody. Because we were all censored. We were all... Anyone who would have was removed from the air.
All right, so you can go to YouTube and subscribe or go through their archives. The Young Turks, they have a YouTube channel if you want to watch that full interview. Cenk, I think that's how you pronounce his name, Cenk Unger, Ugger, or however you pronounce his name. I don't really trust anyone, so I shouldn't even come out and say I don't trust him. I don't trust him as a news source. Now, does he put out information? Yes, he put out accurate information sometimes. But he too wishy-washy for me. He is one of those USA, USA type people. You heard him talking about Al Jazeera. I was actually invited on an Al Jazeera program about a year or so ago. I did not accept that invitation. But you heard him mention that, and he talked about the Russian propaganda. The United States has been engaged in propaganda. I mean, the U.S. government has been involved in propaganda going back to its inception. Newspapers have been involved in pushing state propaganda since their incorporation. This is no secret. For anyone who has studied real history of news, newspapers, the news industry, the printing industry of the United States, And I mentioned this. I'm going to have to find that guy's name. It's been a few years. But he was one of the big three. It was only CBS, ABC, and NBC at the time. This was back in the 1950s. And in an interview or off-the-cuff remarks that he made that were later leaked to the public, he said it is their patriotic duty to push state propaganda. I'm paraphrasing what he's saying, but if they know that the United States government is lying about world affairs, about what's going on in terms of any kind of confrontations between nations, especially involving the United States, they are just going to repeat what government officials say with no proof, ask for no proof. I mentioned this last week. They keep saying the Russians are trying to rig the elections or they're behind these hacks. The Russian government, not just Russian hackers who are autonomous and hacking because that's what hackers do, but we have the so-called news media. These are supposed to be professionals now. All they did was take a press release from the Obama administration that says a CIA official believes that high-level Russian officials may be involved in these hacks of the DNC because they're trying to influence the election. Again, no talking about the crimes that's discussed in these emails. No, they want to red bait you and get you into that USA versus USSR mindset. They want to take it back to the Winter Olympics in the 1980s when the courageous Americans defeated the evil sickle and hammer hockey team of the Russians, and what, you know, they made a movie about it. So they want to take you to that mindset, that gang mentality. That's what it is. They want you to have that gang mentality. So without any proof whatsoever, the mainstream media has been telling the public that the Russians are hacking the election. Now, where were these same people reporting on the hacks that actually occurred of the Democratic primaries? Those were elections too. Those were elections to determine who was going to be the Democratic presidential nominee. Arizona had hacks of their voter registration database. Other states had hacks. There were did y'all see that as a big news issue? So again, you shouldn't be so surprised that the news media that you turn to every night, that many people trust, that they would censor people like Jesse Ventura based on their political positions. So that should tell you something. I always, you know, when I hear a lot of black people who share news from these white platforms and don't provide you with any kind of analysis or trying to tell people how they lying to you. No, they just gonna share the article. They ain't screen article for the practice of deception, and then so that those people they're sharing the article with are not confused, provide some kind of little short commentary. You just basically just sharing the enemy's propaganda is what you're sharing. So we, although those are intelligent sources, we should read them. If we're going to share them, we better provide some analysis. So I'm not surprised that MSNBC were willing to pay Jesse Ventura 3 years' salary to sit at home and not talk to nobody. I am not surprised. I'm going to take a station identification break. I want to share some news. I want to share some political prisoner news. I will check the conference line, see if anybody has a question or a comment they would like to share. Let me get that number out before we go to break. And that number is 641-715-3660. Again, that number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 if you would like to comment on air. This is Scotty Reed. This is Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. The political prisoner of war updates and announcements for the 25th of October, which is tomorrow, is out. And I have shared that in the political prisoner and prisoners of war group in BTR community. It is a group that obviously the platform is members only. But you also have to be a group member to see what we post there. So those members who are part of that, you can look it up. You can also find this information. It is put out by New York City Jericho Movement. And let me just read this here. It's the latest compilation of every other week updates, NYCABC. That's the Anarchist Black Cross, along with several other individuals and prisoner support crews, now send hard copies to all political prisoners and prisoners of war we support. If you consistently mail the latest updates to a specific prisoner, please let us know so we can ensure there's no overlap. The goal is to have copies sent to all the prisoners we list. We've also been told that some prisoners are not receiving the copies sent in. Again, that's state government repression, yet we aren't getting rejection notices. If you are in steady contact with a prisoner, please ask them whether or not they are receiving the updates and let us know. Free them all. That's from the NYC ABC. You can visit them on web at nycabc.wordpress.com. They're also on Fedbook. That is NYC ABC on Fedbook. On Twitter, NYCABC as well. Same for Instagram as well. Same initials, NYCABC. So let me move on. There is a political prisoner with a birthday coming up. Let me pull up this information about Mr. Eddie Africa. Eddie Africa is part of the political prisoners known as the Move family. And this information comes from one of their family members. On the Move, everyone, next Monday, October the 31st, our brother Eddie Africa will be celebrating his birthday. We thought it a good idea to help Eddie celebrate his birthday, despite now being unjustly jailed for 38 years, along with the rest of the Move 9. It's a birthday card drive from friends, family, and supporters from all over the world. We are simply asking people to take the time to drop Eddie a birthday card, wishing him a happy birthday, and to show him some love and light on this special, on his special day. People can write him at Edward Goodman, that's in parentheses, Edward Goodman Africa, A.M., that's Apple and Mary, AM-4974. That is 301 Moray Road. You spell that M-O-R-E-A, Moray Road. And that's in Frackville, as in fracking. That's Frackville, Pennsylvania, 17932. Please note that all cards mailed to Pennsylvania Correctional Facilities have to be mailed in a white envelope. Man, just white supremacy everywhere you look. On the Move, that's from Ori. We're gonna have to get Ori back on. You can also sign a petition demanding United States Attorney General Loretta Lynch open an investigation into the wrongful and ongoing imprisonment of the Move 9. And we have talked to many people over the years involved with advocacy for the Move 9. What is the name of that documentary film? Let It Burn. Go watch that film, Let It Burn, where the FBI worked with the police and the fire department to set a whole black neighborhood on fire to murder people in the Move 9 house. When people tried to come out with their hands up, and while the building was on fire after the FBI dropped a C4 bomb on top of the house that they knew women, children, and animals, for y'all PETA folks out there, were in that home. And then shot at people as they tried to flee the flames. This is your government, the federal government, the state government, the city of Philadelphia. There's no difference. There is collusion among them when it comes to this system of slavery and terrorism. So his birthday, Eddie Africa, his birthday will be up, come up next Monday. So we'll definitely be giving him another birthday shout out then. What else do we have here for you? The prison reform movement published a blog that I thought was interesting. I just love it when the language that we have been using for years on New Abolitionist Radio, on Black Talk Radio Network, starts to just be permeate the language, the English language, when people who speak English are talking about these issues, and more people are waking up. These prisoners are not striking for reform. These prisoners are striking to abolish slavery. Big difference between reforming something and abolishing something. This is slavery. You can't reform slavery. You have to abolish slavery. And there is, let me close out this window, a blog post from the prison reform movement.wordpress.com. It says, abolish the 13th. Let me just share a little bit of this with you. It says, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution declared that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except, that's the key word right there, except as a punishment for a crime, doesn't matter if you're guilty, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. Again, everybody convicted is not guilty, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. What they really meant is their oppression, as they occupy many countries or territories. U.S. Virgin Island, occupied territory. Guam, occupied. American Samoa, occupied. Hawaii, occupied. So they say they have an event. Well, this event isn't until next year, so I'm not even going to share that. But I just thought it was great to see people, more and more people, pointing out the 13th Amendment and the fact that it did not abolish slavery, that it just simply transformed it. And that's why in the UN Charter, not the UN Charter, but the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, it says that slavery shall be abolished in all its forms. See, they know, whoever put together that document and submitted it to the UN Declaration of Human Rights, they know that slavery comes in different forms. Different forms. Now, we know people talk about wage slavery. I like to differentiate between somebody who is incarcerated on a prison plantation as opposed to somebody who is an exploited worker but have freedom of movement. See, they can leave, they can quit, they can find another job, they can compete out there in the job market, even though the job market is rigged. And where before you could get a call center job with AT&T, well, they didn't move their customer service to the prison plantation now. So kind of hard to, unless you go to prison, then you can join their workforce as a slave and get paid slave wages. You might be able to afford some ramen noodles, a couple of packs of ramen noodles, what they gonna pay you, and some toilet paper on the side there, or maybe even a candy bar or something. So it's just great whenever I keep seeing people recognizing that we are not talking about mass incarceration. We're talking about slavery, the continuation of it. It was never abolished. Again, you better not call yourself a PhD scholar on history or anything else if you still out here saying that when black people was enslaved or back when Lincoln freed the slaves, because you know what? I'm going to believe that you got your degree out of Cracker Jack box. Or basically, you just did no research study on your own. You just took what the system gave you. The education system is part of the overall system of slavery. And just took what they gave you as fact, did no exploration, no critical thinking, asked no questions, and now you out here regurgitating that to another generation of misinformed people. That's how lies continue. All right. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time tonight will be Tando Radio Show. It will be pre-recorded. It was pre-recorded earlier today, so we will not be taking any calls at all, but you will still be able to listen on the conference line. I will keep that open. Let me see. It's Monday. Again, it is October the 24th. I believe it is just three programs. This morning was the second broadcast of Today's Entrepreneur. Today's Entrepreneur is hosted by Andrea James. It comes on Monday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, and I think that would be 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. The program's already been archived. You can check that out. So today, this program will be the live broadcast, but we will live stream the pre-recorded program for a Tando Radio Show. Let me see if there's anything else I need to mention before we go off air. Let me give a quick glance at the calendar that's on btrcommunity.com. Tomorrow, let me open up this. You have the Mapuche struggle. Our kids have to be revolutionaries. Give me just a second as I get to those event details. This will be going down in Brooklyn, New York, at the base, which is 1302 Myrtle Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Mapuche peoples have continued armed resistance against colonization for over 500 years. Get a sneak peek at a new documentary profiling three indigenous women who share their struggles from fiery student protests to mass land occupations. The screening will be followed by a discussion with the filmmaker. That is and anybody, you don't have to be a member of btrcommunity.com to see what's posted in the calendar or event section. So you can definitely get the details to that. There is no website, but this is, I'm assuming, yeah, it is free and open to the public. It is. Okay, what's next? That's going down tomorrow. It might have been nice if I told you what time, huh? Not sure if the time was listed. Yes, it was. I'm sorry. Let me give you the time. 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time until 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Again, this is at the base, 1302 Myrtle Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. So check out that film screening. There will be also tomorrow, and I bet you this is in New York as well, the Political Prisoner Letter Writing Dinner. This will, again, occur at the base. Let me just share some of the event details. It's 2016 in the U.S. government's war on environmental activists and animal liberationists is still being waged. NYC, ABC, and Sacramento Prisoner Support have responded with Project Fang, a travel fund for earth and animal liberation prisoners, with Tyler Lang and Kevin Olive recently moved to halfway houses. The imprisonment of Joseph Buddenberg and the impending trial of Nicole Cassane, we are reminded of the backwards and arbitrary logic the state uses to deem who are terrorists. I think I've reported on this before. We talked about it on New Abolitionist Radio, how they are using laws to determine what they're going to determine to be terrorism and using it against activists. So, for example, if I went to the headquarters of the GEO group, one of the largest private prison enslavers in this country, and I went to their headquarters in Boca Raton, and a group of us chained ourselves to the door. We're not letting you get in the building today. We're going to chain ourselves to the door. You're going to have to work from home today, I guess. And we could be charged with terrorism under what some of these laws say. State. I forget the exact name of that particular law, but I remember when it was in the news and we talked about it in depth. And again, this is the country we live in. It is not the one that they put out to the world, the face they put out to the world with the propaganda that this is the freest place on the planet. Where else would you want to live? We have so much freedom and liberty. We got it coming out our ears and what have you. Well, how can that be true when you have the world's largest prison slave population? When you arrest more of your citizens than any country on the face of the earth, how can those people be having so much liberty and freedom? When the vast majority of your victims are in there for nonviolent, victimless crimes, and I'm not even going to say just limited to drug crimes, sex workers, that's nonviolent. That's nonviolence. It shouldn't even be a crime. You can say that morality stuff for the church. That's your morals. And the damn people, you having sex anyway outside of marriage. So why should these people be put into slavery because they can't find a job because AT&T and other corporations want to utilize prison slave labor instead of utilizing people on the street? So then these people become homeless and they're forced into these situations where then they have to trade in flesh because that's all they have. And then you have the cops like out there in San Francisco and other parts out there preying upon these underage sex workers. Y'all ain't forgot about that, have you? So anyway, coming up again at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time will be Tando Radio Show. So they were going to have a political prisoner letter writing dinner at the base. That's the same address that I gave you before. The date and time is October the 25th. That's tomorrow from 7 o'clock p.m. to 9:15 p.m. Of course, that's Eastern time, as that is in New York. Coming up on October the 26th, you can protest at Trump's ribbon-cutting grand opening for the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. If you are into protesting, if you into that sort of thing, and the movement has its place for it. I'm not one of these people that's going to criticize anything people doing to counter racism. Hey, if that's the best they could come up with, at least they doing something. And again, it has its propaganda value. And propaganda works both ways. So, the Trump Hotel has announced their grand opening ribbon cutting ceremony scheduled for the morning of Wednesday, October the 26th. Gather at 9:30 a.m. and stay through the ceremony. In the face of the September 12 protests at the soft opening of the Trump International Hotel, again, this is in Washington, D.C., Donald Trump decided to stay away. The Trump family will be present at the ribbon-cutting ceremony on Wednesday. From the very beginning of his campaign, Trump has served as a lightning rod for bigotry against Mexicans, Muslims, the black community, immigrants, refugees, women, and people with disabilities. He has scapegoated the most vulnerable communities for the declining social and economic conditions facing working people in the United States and portray himself as some strongman billionaire savior for those who have been left behind. But he is just another servant of Wall Street and the military-industrial complex with an economic agenda to reduce taxes and regulations for the Fortune 500 corporations while promising to spend even more on the military, weapons, and war rather than the people's needs. Let's not also forget, this is Scotty speaking, that he is the law and order candidate. He's talking like Bill Clinton, like he gonna flood the streets with hundreds of thousands of more slave catchers, and he has publicly stated his support for modern day slavery and human trafficking. And specifically, he mentioned private prisons, which, by the way, we reported last week, the GEO Group just made a total of $150,000 $150,000 contribution, political contribution to a Trump super PAC. Again, I'm not on here to tell you Hillary Clinton's any better, because she's not. They're both monsters. They're both criminals. But I'm just, since they're talking about Trump, I'm talking about Trump. Okay, so this will go down again at 9:30 a.m. on October the 26th. They want you to stay towards the end. It will, the address is Trump International Hotel, 1100 Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C. And that is in affiliation with the Answers Coalition, or this demonstration has been initiated by the Answers Coalition. Let's see, still got a few minutes. There is coming up also on the 26th, Ajumu Baraka, who is the Green Party candidate for vice president, will be in, let me see, this is in Jackson, Mississippi, the Coalition of Economic Justice Cooperation Jackson and the Green Party of Mississippi will host vice presidential candidate Ajumu Baraka at the Lumumba Center from 2 p.m. Central to 5 p.m. Central. Refreshments will be served in local restaurant Nubia's Place. Will have catered food available for sale on site. Much of the later part of the afternoon will be devoted to media interviews by appointment only, so come early. So that's in the calendar going down on the 26th. That will be Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday. All right, so that's all the news that I have for you today. I want to thank our guests for joining us today, Miss Karen Zhao, and also the family member who wanted to remain anonymous because of the reputation of the brutality and terroristic tactics of the NYPD and the federal government. So she wanted to remain anonymous. Want to thank them for coming on and sharing their information and giving their testimony of what happened to them in a courthouse in New York City. Do want to remind you the crowdfunding Black Media campaign is ongoing. We would not be on air if we did not have people providing financial support, just like some of the other alternative outlets that do a lot of good work, Black Agenda Report, Democracy Now!, The Real News. But all of those outlets, these independent outlets that we are honored to be counted among as an independent source for real news, they are all funded by listeners and visitors to the website, the people who are consuming the media. So you can also get a Black Radio Stations Matters t-shirt. We have all sizes from small to extra, extra large. If you need one of those like me, and we have those, and it's yours free for a contribution of $25 to Black Talk Media Project. And you can find out our address and more information on how you can get your free Black Radio Stations Matters tee by going to blacktalkmediaproject.org. Definitely check me out. Join me on btrcommunity.com. Again, that's a new online Black social experience. It's set up as a safe digital space for Black people where there is no data mining, there is no police surveillance, there are no ads. Why do we need ads? We don't need to market to you when you are joining this community with a contribution of $24 a year. So that is how we pay for the resources, is by everybody making a small contribution. Recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. I think today's story about the Bronx 120 proved that. If you need more information, go to bronx120.org. That's www.bronx120.org. If you doubt anything I say, or you doubt my assertion that many millions of people live behind enemy lines. That's how they are treated. They're preyed upon, and they have been marked for slavery. I don't want to call it new slavery, because there's nothing new about it. It's just a continuation of slavery in this country in a different form. So when you recognize these facts, hopefully you will develop strategies and tactics to keep yourself from being a slave, but there is no guarantee. That is why you need to join with millions and millions and millions of other potential victims and become a new abolitionist, so that we can abolish slavery and not sit around and wait until it happens to us or someone we love. We must abolish slavery in this 21st century. We cannot allow it to plague yet another generation. So we hope that you all will join us. With that said, peace and blessings to all. Be safe.